Welcome to Booktopia On. Today we're talking about Science of a Bestseller. I'm here with Sarah, John and Ben.
Hi.
I mean, I want to know the science of it.
You want to write a bestseller.
If there's an algorithm to be learned.
Can we ask the boring question at the beginning? What are we classing as a bestseller?
Like sold into multiple countries and
certain number
on multiple bestseller lists.
Are we talking...
Things that stand the test of time as well, maybe? That just continue.
Oh, well, there are things that...
sell and sell and sell.
Like Mao's Not a Red Book. No?
That's a bestseller.
That's a bestseller.
Yeah, well done.
What's
Mao,
a bestseller?
Mao's Little Red Book.
I printed out a list from the internet.
The Bible would probably be a bestseller.
The best-selling books of all time.
Yes.
It starts with the Da Vinci Code. And then, do you know what it ends with?
Can we just end this whole podcast now? So
it's
I take it the science is saying things really obviously, making sure that every single person can possibly follow what's going on and predict what's going to happen in the end and feel vindicated when they get it right.
Yeah, look, if you want a book that is a bestseller, then you have to ensure that not just people who read books read it, but everyone. Like
yeah.
The people who only read one book
It has to be the non-reading audience
yeah.
that reads it.
So it needs to be a... Good
so what,
story,
what have we got?
Right?
We've got Harry Potter, we've got 50 Shades, we've got Da Vinci Code. What else is on there?
Stephanie Meyer.
A lot of
Twilight,
Dan Brown,
yeah.
just generally. Like, I think by the time we get to an author that's not J.K. Rowling, Dan Brown or E.L. James, it's number 12 and we're at Twilight.
Oh, goodness. It's so interesting that Trump has risen to power when we're reading such wonderful books.
This is not a podcast, right? We can't do this podcast.
I thought we're doing it, right?
We're doing it. Right.
It's happening right now.
This is getting real, Bron. This is too real for Bron.
It's Monday.
Wants to get out.
It's Monday. I personally, I don't know about you guys, but I'm channeling Voldemort. I've only had one coffee. I'm feeling a little bit depressed. Let's talk about
this. You're telling Dolores something.
So if you're out there, and Dan Brown was one of these people that wanted to create a bestseller. So he tried to replicate... Dale Brown, and none of you remember who Dale Brown was, but Dale Brown was an action a thriller writer who dealt with the Air Force and the like. And so one of Dan Brown's original books came out pretty much packaged exactly the same as Dale Brown. Didn't work for him. He was a bit annoyed, I think. And then he came out with something which was very similar to the sort of stuff that Matt Riley was kind of doing, another action one, and then he hit on... Angels the Demon, and didn't quite capture it, so he wrote it again and called it Da Vinci Code, and then that hit it because it was about...
Did Angels the Demon come first?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's why it's so similar. So the second book is almost is Angels the Demon redone, but he got things, he tweaked with his model, he tweaked it, and that's what his aim was. He wanted to be this kind of writer. So the people we should be speaking to, the person we should be speaking to is Dan Brown, but he was unavailable for today's podcast.
Dan Brown method, okay.
If you
study the
method,
you follow the Dan Brown steps
and set up
your buckets.
Someone who is just now considering reading the Da Vinci Code, I'm a bit behind there. my understanding of his writing style is that he has a cliffhanger at almost the end of every chapter, right? So you're constantly drawn through. Similar to James Patterson, who has really short, punchy chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So these are
Matthew Riley.
Yeah. Also, titles. When you look over this list, there are a lot of one-word titles. Maybe that's a thing. Maybe you should just
because they're
have,
easier to
like,
remember.
Chocolat is in there, and or like nouns with the in front of it, like the help, the island,
the Martian.
Yeah, atonement, one word. Twilight, one word. Labyrinth, one word. Birdsong.
Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Yeah, so basically, either call your book The Thing or Thing.
Thing.
And that's
Thing
all you
been
need
taken
to know.
Yet?
Well, there was that run of books that had really, really, really long titles.
Oh, yeah. 100-year-old man who jumped out the window and climbed away.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
like
yeah
that.
I love that title.
The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Net.
I think that started.
Or something like The Curious Case
Every
of
Harry
Benjamin
Potter
Button.
Book has a long title.
Yeah, I think you either go really, really short or just go all out.
Because both ways are really memorable.
So basically, there's no rule for the title.
I think,
there are
these trends in books, and they're often set off by one particular killer.
Like the time traveler's wife, and then everyone started calling their books.
No, yeah, and then there's a whole series of copycat novels. Yeah. And very rarely do the copycat... I mean, we have seen it where one of the copycats, you know, gets the formula so right that it becomes the model.
Like Gone Girl, and then all the girl books that followed. The Millennium one came first.
Yeah, but right? You've got Twilight, and then you have E.L. James writing a fan fiction of Twilight. Same model, just more sex.
Yeah.
The root of all the evil.
But it didn't... Like Stephanie Meyer said she... What she based hers on? She was on something as well. So it wasn't completely by itself.
Oh, okay, the mashup theory. So most things that are hugely possible take two or three familiar things and squish them all together in like a new way. Like you could say Harry Potter is like, you know, magic pressing a button. Yeah, like school days in boarding school and there's magic and everyone loved it. And then what's another one you could say? Gone Girl is a good example, like domestic drama, but hey, also crime. And
well, the Dan Brown one is, you've got all that, the history stuff, and you match it with
conspiracy and stuff, theories. Sex.
Yeah. Dan Brown is interesting to me because, you know, with the release of the new Dan, and, you know, Dan Fever, Brown Fever, that sounds like a horrible disease. Dan, I was called Dan Fever, you know, taking hold again.
Brown Fever.
Number one.
What Brown Fever, please?
No one wants that, okay. There's been some articles coming about, you know, people have interviewed Dan and gone into his home and seen how he lives and what he reads. And one thing I find particularly interesting about this guy is that he doesn't read fiction.
No. Not even read.
So don't...
He doesn't... He doesn't fall into a formula.
But maybe it's because he's too busy writing.
No, he reads...
He reads a lot of fiction.
He has to research books. So much religion to cover.
It's that thing, you know, write the book you want to read. And he's... You know, he likes, you know, European history. It's just...
So he just converts that.
He's just cramming all this stuff into some wacky novel.
I found this one-line description that I, like, copied and pasted in preparation for this podcast, which described the Da Vinci Code as murder, sex, conspiracy, and Jesus. Like, that's a good pitch, right?
So Jesus.
So maybe if he can write a book that has a great one-line description that, you know... A great sales pitch.
I just want to point out here that Sarah's the only one with some research here and some notes to bring into the... She's very organized.
It was really extensive. It was like 10 minutes ago. I was like, oh.
Yes, that's what we said. We're going to the printer. And I was like, there she goes.
I better quickly print out the best-selling books of all time in preparation for this podcast.
It's still more than the rest of us.
But is there anything, over the years, how many of you read some of these bestsellers?
I mean, I've read all the Harry Potters, and I have read the E.L. James, and I have read the Twilight. I haven't read the Dan Brown, but I've seen them.
Look, so, I mean, this page of the list, because it's multiple pages, on this page I've read The Help, I've read Memoirs of a Geisha, I've read P.S. I Love You.
Yes, it all is.
I've read Chocolate. I've read The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas. Like, everyone's read these, because they're the ones that everyone reads. To Kill a Mockingbird's on there. All the Philip Pullman books are on there. I have not read The Shadow of the Wind. So there's that.
Yeah.
There's a doctor. I'm really tired, okay? It's Monday. There's an Dr. Atkins book on the best-selling books of all time.
Oh, yeah.
Diet books and
the
stuff.
The diet, yeah. I mean,
self-help books. What about The Barefoot Effect? So that's been our major bestseller.
Barefoot, what?
The Barefoot
Effect.
The Barefoot Effect.
Barefoot Effect.
But his method is what I meant to say. Like, the barefoot method is to have something that everyone wants to be, which is, like, rich or at least financially stable, and write a book of really good advice with a lot of really sensible, common sense ideas of how to...
Yeah,
but there's a lot of books like that.
This is one of those battlegrounds where there's a lot of people out to make money who want the bestseller list more than anything, and they're playing formulas to try and hit it. Books like The 4-Hour Workweek, that guy took that title and he ran like several different possible titles as Google ads. bought the Google ads and then saw which one got the most clicks and made that his title. Like, these guys are using like weird salesy science.
That's really, really smart.
To sell books.
The other thing I also found in my like 10 minutes of research for this podcast is a book called The Bestseller Code.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they posit, the authors of that book, that there is an algorithm and that these are some of the things you need. So you have to have symmetry in your plot line, a clear three-act structure, close relationship between the characters, which, I mean, this is all very simple stuff.
And
but maybe...
Well, the thing is, most of these rules are being followed by most of the writers. Some writers just get bloody lucky. I mean, I think E.L. James is one of those examples where you just go, things converged on this person and the book just went kaboom. And
were really ready to embrace
it was the
a
right
writer,
time.
And along came this book, and it was everyone had already read it as Twilight. So, like...
Yeah, it was familiar. But, that saying, which is a bestseller is a book that sells well because it's selling well, it means, I mean, when our accountant here at Booktopia came over to me, I think 6 to 8 months after E.L. James was on the front page of a newspaper and said, have you heard about this book called 50 Shades of Grey? And I went, oh yes, I have heard of this book. I'm just starting to read it. When your accountant starts to read a book, you know this book has gone global. You know this book is reaching every single kind of person on the planet.
Disclaimer, we're not suggesting that accountants don't read fiction.
Erotic female fiction, maybe. But it's one of those things where most people in Australia, when you think about a bestseller, it's selling 30,000 copies. I don't know if I'm going to burst people's bubble. But out there in the world, if you're dreaming of having a bestseller...
You need millions and millions.
No, 30,000 copies and you're a bestseller in Australia. We're talking about people who crack the code and you're heading towards 100 million. So there are people who have done sales of 100 million people or sales around the world. But to be a best-selling author, the one where you see best-selling authors stamped on the front of their cover, it really is, we're talking in the thousands. And so whether or not we're talking about bestseller code, the bestseller code, the science of bestseller, we're talking about in the main. If you're in Australia, you don't need that many to become a best-selling author.
So it depends what kind of bestseller you want to be.
How rich do you want to be?
Domestic or international, everyone.
Yeah, and the list that Sarah's got is just will be either American sales or UK sales.
Yeah.
Because when you get into the E.L. James level, you're published in every language possible.
Mm-hmm.
And so accruing the numbers, I mean, they were talking hundreds of millions of copies being sold worldwide of that. And the same with Da Vinci Code and the like. And because they're in, it's pretty much, there's no language you're not publishing. I mean, we had Graham Simsion in the other day, whose Rosie Effect is one of these big books that sold all over the world and sold millions of copies around the world. And he's still getting, he had Georgia signing up to publish Rosie Project for the first time. And that's, 5 years after the Rosie Project came out. So these authors have, when you hit that stratosphere, your sales can keep going and going and going in different markets
forever,
and different languages for forever. And that's where you get those big numbers like the Agatha Christie. Where is she on the list?
Yeah, she's not here.
Yeah, so
this is post-book scan, this list.
Yeah, so maybe people like Agatha
Where's
Christie's have sold. Yeah, so they've sold so much more than your list there. So it's a...
Well, I only had 10 minutes, John.
I know. Your research was poor.
But I did some, and I have some, so I'm winning.
Well, in Australia these days, if you're a mega bestseller, it's probably 100,000, do you reckon?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are the numbers where you crack different markets. So
and how many people in Australia? They don't got the
20-something million.
20-something million. That's pathetic. Australia, that's pathetic. We need to be reading more. All of us need to be reading more. I mean, I read a lot. You read a lot.
And buying more.
The people who
if you're listening
reading,
to this book podcast,
weight.
Go home and read a book.
You don't think
Stop
it's our audience.
Doing
is
great.
I hear 50 Shades of Grey is amazing.
There's a new Dan Brown.
But really, I mean, you're thinking about that. I mean, all these people who aren't reading within the Australian market, the one thing that makes us feel a little bit better is diversity. So at Booktopia, we've got so much stock here and so many different titles, and we're seeing sales right across the whole range. So we're not all reading the one book at the one time. It's probably better for society.
Yeah,
probably.
It would be so boring if we were all reading the same book all the time.
So out of those, 100,000 people who are buying, say, Burke and Wills this Christmas, There are 100,000 people buying the absolute opposite book, and there are 100,000 people buying another book.
So the opposite book would be Wildenberg.
With a completely different ending.
With a happy ending.
Yeah, with a happy ending, exactly.
They survive!
Spoiler alert.
Oh, whoa, we just they ruined that whole Burke and Will story. Sorry, Peter Fitz.
Yeah, huge spoiler. That
were you
was
not
a
paying
well
attention
kept
to high school?
Yeah, Hamlet dies too.
It's like that. You said that spoils everything. Yeah. We've got to stop while we're ahead of the spoiler thing.
Yeah,
so, like, we're going to write a bestseller now, right? Now that we know the
already
science
done
it. Of
sorry.
It.
Sorry. Get out of here.
Oh, okay. Well.
So some of it, the rest, the other three of us will, like, think tank one.
Well, so do we want to go with single
what are your components?
Word title?
What are your components? So is it a female or a male author that you should be going out with? I went out with female.
Ah.
Oh.
You did.
I think female...
What's JK? JK went out to the market as indeterminate.
Went, could be
yeah.
true. And EL? James?
EL, indeterminate. Yep.
So maybe you have to be...
How many indeterminates are on there?
All right, so there's JK, EL.
That's it?
That's it for a few pages.
Because personally, if I see a book
it.
On the shelf
but
with a EL, James, I do...
It is
oh,
rather...
J.R. Tolkien. And,
there's
and
more.
Where's Game of Thrones man? He's not even on it.
George R.
Look, I don't even know what this is. It's the
must
list is called the top 100 best-selling books of all time.
They lied to you.
It was from The Guardian.
Sorry,
maybe it's old.
Yeah.
It well could be.
Yeah, probably. They hadn't heard of Agatha Christie yet.
Can't be that old.
I got a calendar reminder about this podcast, and I did everything I could in the time that we had.
I think.
So what are they, is
okay.
male or female, and what is it?
I
love.
I think it looks to
is
be.
Is it thriller? Is it kids?
I mean, it might be changing today because, a lot of authors back in the day would have their initials, the female authors, or go under a man's name.
George Eliot.
George Eliot.
Yeah. Especially in the genres
Franklin.
Like, science fiction and fantasy, things like that.
So you three are writing a book to get in the bestseller list. What are your components? What are the things you're going to go?
Sex.
No, we've done that.
Sex, violence.
Murder.
Murder.
Lots of high stakes.
Right now,
high
so
stakes,
they're
think.
Looking at the market right now. You say murder is the hottest thing at the moment?
I mean, murder
books?
Never
Weight
goes
loss?
Out of fashion. Look at
Weight
murder
loss.
At the Orient Express for the 1200th time, and it will be amazing.
So, are we choosing crime as our genre?
Okay, if we're writing a best-selling crime book.
But maybe we do. Maybe we have to do a mashup and have it. What has murder not been mashed up with?
Clowns.
Weight loss?
Oh, that's
it's
not true.
Murder
no, but like
weight
a circus.
Loss.
I'm thinking like
loss.
A circus.
There's
weight
a thing
loss.
Called it.
No, not
a
clown.
I want
like
a dog in there. Can we get a dog in there?
A dog, clowns.
The dog has to
weight
die.
Loss. No, but that... Oh, I mean... Think of some of the, the classic dog stories,
Can we have
oh,
a tree house? Is there a tree house?
Oh, there should be a tree house. This is not going to be a good book.
You don't know.
I think we just need to spend some time on this.
So our treehouse murder weight loss dog book.
Oh.
I think your book's going to suck.
Dot,
sorry.
Dot.
Maybe there's no science. Maybe you just have to write what's in your heart.
There doesn't seem to be any science on your list there. Like, it doesn't seem to be...
Like they're all so different.
They
doesn't
are.
Seem to be much of a similarities between them all.
Well, what's our current bestseller list is Barefoot Investor, followed by Maggie Beer, followed by The Subtle Art of Not Giving a... am I allowed to say
beep.
On the podcast? Of Not Giving a Beep. And then we've got Sherry Barber, Renovating for Profit. Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls, yay! Force of Nature by Jane Huffer, yay! Origin by Dan Brown,
yay!
Recovery by Russell Brand, which I soon want to read. Working Class Man by Jane Barnes. Yeah, in pre-order, and we end with David Assel's Gargantuan Book of Words. So that's pretty diverse.
That is a very diverse list. So there's no rule we can make out of that list.
Yeah.
It's all over the place. This is the problem. Is everyone
a lot
wants
of non-fiction, though.
There's no romance on the list, so romance is out.
Romance is dead, man.
Yeah. There is no such thing as love.
Although, no, because renovating for profit within the Australian context is very romantic.
Mm. It's an idealistic idea. Girl power.
Girl power is a thing right now.
But will that last the way some of the other bestsellers have lasted? You know what I mean? It could just be like a flare in the...
It's already had great lasting power.
It's done the whole year round. So it's Barefoot the whole year round.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but in the grand scheme of things, it's just a year.
Well, barefoot is that.
You want girl power to go away, Brian?
Are you saying that?
Yes,
I don't want girl power to stay.
Never.
Look, in 100 years, we might not see either the Barefoot Investor or Goodnight Stories for Real Girls, but...
Well, I feel like Barefoot Investor won't be relevant that far into the future. Things will have changed so much.
But Origin will still be around.
Yes, so will Goodnight Stories for Real Girls. But there'll be so many more stories that we can put in that, so...
Look, there always seems to be something big happening in kids.
I just think there needs to be something for someone to walk away with. We've advertised this podcast as the science of
The bestseller. Yeah. Turns out we don't know anything.
We're sending you away with despair to learn that there is no such thing as science of the bestseller.
Oh, goodness.
So what do these authors all have in common? Like, some of them seem to be quite tactical, like what you're saying about...
Dan Brown.
Yeah. Others... I don't know how much strategy went into 50 Shades of Grey. I feel like that was probably written from the heart.
Mm.
Or the,
or the from other the heart, areas. Yeah. Then, I don't know, a book by a celebrity is always a good idea. Be a celebrity and then write a book. That's the trick.
Who was saying that the other day? Someone was telling me.
Oh, yes, who was saying that? Who did we have in there?
Oh, it was Adam Spencer, wasn't it? Was that his tips?
We might have cracked it. Become famous. Yeah, and then your book will be a bestseller, guaranteed.
Boom.
Or at least your advance will be handsome enough to make it worthwhile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll approach you to write the book.
He's hoping. Well, you can contact me.
I think if you want to get rich from writing, I think you might want to change it.
Reconsider
that your career. You might as well just go down to the newsagent, buy yourself a lottery ticket and have a bit of a punt. Because the chances of actually making... the trillions of dollars that some of the lucky few have made is pretty much nil.
You could say it of almost any creative industry, though.
Yeah. And these guys kind of ruin it for everyone else because you go, oh, if I'd only just come up with that whole...
And then everything becomes compared to that. It's like, oh, it's no Harry Potter.
And you just never know which one's gonna hit the mark.
You really don't.
With the subtle art book, the sweary self-help phenomenon, there's several books in that small canon of writing. But this one sold hundreds of thousands of copies.
Yeah. And think about J.K. Rowling.
They're almost
all the
identical.
Yeah,
you know, people, you know, the publishing house on the other side of Sydney, looking at the subtle art sales, must be saying, why is it now? Why?
Because
they should have gone with Orange and Black. Orange and Black is
they've got the one that they need. They don't need anymore. Okay, so there's no science.
There's things that have worked for others.
Yeah, I wouldn't write something that's already, especially if it's non-fiction, don't write something that people can... fiction as well. Don't write something that someone can already read for free. If you're writing to a huge audience, write something that feels familiar enough for a really wide readership to feel comfortable with.
Yeah.
But maybe... match it up with something a little bit unexpected.
Yeah, so surprise and delight. You know, do something that's perhaps do something that grabs attention, particularly
like put a swear word in the title of your book.
Yeah, or do something media worthy. You know, like you know, claim that Jesus Christ had a bloodline.
Interesting. Be outrageous.
What else? Support your booksellers. Go to do signings. Be
said
nice.
With no agenda.
Oh yeah, we forgot about that because.
This is true.
This is our big lesson. Working here at Booktopia, we had to go out there to the world and ask authors to help out and to answer our questions and the like. And the first people that answered our questions, which were the 10 terrifying questions, were Wilbur Smith, Maeve Binchy, Jackie Collins, and who else? There's a few of the biggies.
Lee Child.
Because they know that that's what you do.
That's what you
do. This little no-name online bookshop in Australia.
You say, yes, I can do that. And every little tiny bit of promotion helps get your name around.
Yeah.
And you're never too big just to say, yeah, I can do that. I can answer questions on your blog, no worries. Mm. And these are the guys that have sold 600 million copies of their books around the world.
You would think they'd be resting on their laurels now, not having to do any sort of...
When I only met Jackie Collins right at the end of her career, and she'd already sold 600 million copies. She didn't need me to help her sell anymore. And yet she took the time to do it. It was fantastic.
Yeah, and I think you see namesay brands do this as well. You know, you'll see like a big car company like Ford or Toyota will buy the rights to put their logo on the like a small regional team's football jersey. You know, they don't need that.
But
they're buying the space so some other upstart company can't do that. And so they know, they just...
Well, now things have turned sinister.
Yeah, so this is the thing. Like, what I think these best-selling...
Be like a big corporation.
Yeah, these best-selling authors just know exactly how competitive it is. Yeah. And they're playing the game.
Well, this is Tanya's favourite one, is a bestseller is a best seller. So any author who's going to really get out there has to sell themselves.
Oh, you have to be the best seller.
The best seller.
Yeah. So be the best at selling and you'll have
a bestseller.
Like go and read a book on sales.
Yeah.
And then you might have the
sales and marketing. And especially digital marketing and social marking are things that are really important.
Well, it's not
these
just selling your book, it's selling yourself as well as an author. So that's why you have your social
accounts. Changed so much, isn't it, in the last few years?
Well, you've got a woman who's come from obscurity to sell over 1 million copies of a book of poetry on the back of social media and putting her face out there.
Because she's a really good seller.
Yeah, she's a really good seller.
So is that what we're gonna finish on, that kind of high note?
Be the best seller.
Sell
and you
yourself.
Can write a best seller.
Sell yourself, sell the book, make sure that everyone hears about it the best
but
you
also,
can.
But also, write from the soul.
Oh, yeah. write a wonderfully...
Believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Follow your dreams.
Yeah, the thing is, you can't do this from a cynic's perspective. So Matt Riley sells hundreds of thousands of copies around Australia because he loves what he does. And he didn't do it to become a bestseller. He did it because that's the stories he loves to write.
Yeah.
And people can tell if you're bullshitting. They can tell.
Yeah. So
write a
ultimately,
be a bestseller
we end with,
and have heart.
First of all, we know nothing, but be a good seller and follow your dreams and have heart.
And on that note, I think we're done.
We're done.
We solved it.
We managed to talk for 27 minutes about this, guys.
About something we know nothing about.
And thank you for sticking with us if you're still here.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week at 11 a.m. on Wednesday.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.